And see you next year.
WUSB-FM was granted a license by the Federal Communications Commission to serve the public interest as a public trustee until June 1, 1991. Our license will expire on June 1, 1991. We must file an application for renewal with the FCC on or before February the 1st, 1991. When filed, a copy of this application will be available for public inspection during our regular business hours. It contains information concerning this station's performance during the last license period. Individuals who wish to advise the FCC of facts relating to our renewal application and to whether this station has operated in the public interest should file comments and petitions with the FCC by May 1, 1991. Further information concerning the FCC's broadcast license renewal process is available at WUSB-FM, Stony Brook Union, Room 271, State University of New York at Stony Brook, or may be obtained from the Federal Communications Commission, Washington, D.C., 20554. WUSB-FM is licensed by the Federal Communications Commission to serve the public interest as a public trustee.
The staff of WUSB-FM is once again inviting our listeners to help us make the holiday season a bit brighter for Long Island children who must spend the Christmas and Hanukkah holidays in a hospital or child care facility. For every listener phone call we receive between now and December 19th, WUSB-FM will donate an equal number of records to a variety of such facilities for their distribution to children. If you'd like to add your name to the holiday greetings cards that we will be sending along with the records, give us a call at 632-6498. Please leave your name at the tone, and please leave a clear spelling of your name. Remember, for the cost of a phone call, you can join us in wishing happy holidays to some very special Long Island children. Please call us at 632-6498. And remember, please leave your name at the tone. People at WUSB-FM would like to thank you for your support.
Stardate December 1st. If it's clear tonight, look outside. You'll see a brilliant red object near the moon, and that's the red planet Mars. Mars is now at its brightest, and the moon also looks full and bright. They're both in the sky all night long. It's no coincidence that this month's full moon is near Mars. Last week, Earth passed between Mars and the Sun. Mars is still generally opposite the Sun as seen from Earth. Every full moon is opposite the Sun, so the Moon and Mars are located in the same direction in space, and they appear near each other. You know, it's fun to recall why any body in space looks full. All the moons and planets in our solar system are half in sunlight and half in shadow, all the time. When the fully lighted half of a planet or moon faces us, we see that body look full. So Mars and the Moon are both opposite the Sun. The sunlit halves of both worlds are facing in our direction, a full Moon, a full Mars. The full Moon is no problem to see, but it takes a telescope and a discerning eye to recognize a full Mars. On the other hand, even without a telescope, you can appreciate the full face of Mars right now. It's helping the planet appear at its very brightest. So take a look outside tonight for Mars and the Moon. They'll rise together in the east around sunset, and they'll dominate the sky all night long. This is Stardate, and we're very proud to be heard on radio stations like KAXE-FM, Grand Rapids, Minnesota. WCQS-FM in Asheville, North Carolina, and WNYE-FM, Brooklyn, New York. Stardate is a production of the McDonald Observatory at the University of Texas at Austin. And for the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
Is pot an addictive drug? Some believe that even the practice of regularly smoking grass does not induce actual addiction. But that's a myth, according to the Chemical Dependency Program at Ridgeview Institute outside Atlanta.
Clearly defined physical withdrawal syndrome is evident from marijuana addiction. We see that in the adolescents.
The number you have reached, 1, has been changed. The new number is 2. Please make a note of it.
Please repeat.
The number you have reached has been changed. The new number has been disconnected.
Brain damage.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
Dies ist viel besser.
Deja vu.
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you
Stardate
say?
Stardate December 1st.
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
Well, this is as good a way as any to start off, I suppose. Let's see if we can get it cranked up again, eh? Oh, no! We're being invaded! Folks, I don't know what's going on out there, but we seem to be having difficulties. Big difficulties. Everything's slowing down and speeding up. And repeating.
And repeating. And repeating. And repeating. And repeating. And repeating. And repeating. And repeating. And repeating. And repeating. And repeating. And repeating. And repeating.
Yes, folks. Pot is an addictive drug. Let's go to Berlin.
Germany today. People, places, and politics. The arts, too. From Bonn, Berlin, and New York. Timely coverage of the events and issues inside Germany that are important to America.
This is Germany Today. I'm Lee Murphy in New York with Melanie Brubaker, Peggy Trautmann, Joseph Fleming, Alfred Schroeder, and Mike Shea in Germany. We go to Leipzig on the eve of Germany's first all-nation election since World War II. America's recent midterm vote was watched closely in Germany and discussed by U.S. foreign policy experts. We have a special report on that. German automakers think the new luxury car tax approved by Congress unfairly targets their high-end cars more than the Japanese or Big Three. For one German bank, business is so good, it's too good. What's in a name? Plenty, if it's a street name in what used to be East Germany. We'll tell you why. Details in a moment on Germany Today. All over the free world, there's at least a vague similarity between retailers and politicians. One sells consumer products, the other concepts and policies. Especially this early Christmas season, with Americans worried about recession and Germans wondering who'll lead them in the months and years ahead. Across Germany, voters are waiting for their day, like their U.S. counterparts, just a bit weary of listening to the candidates after all the campaigning. One city where the balloting has a special significance is Leipzig, in what used to be East Germany, and where last year's first demonstrations occurred that toppled the hardline communists of the GDR. Let's take the trip to Leipzig.
The main issue in the election is Germany's reunification process. Some Eastern Germans think the process of converting to a market economy is occurring too slowly. Others think it's happening too fast. There is little talk among voters or politicians of social issues, such as abortion, or international topics, such as Germany's role in the Gulf crisis. Leipzig students, who helped lead last year's uprising, seem disappointed in the electoral process. While walking in the town center, two students passed by a group of politicians making speeches. When a visitor asked what they were talking about, one of the students simply replied, "Nothing." But Andreas Hausstein is a 20-year-old medical student in Leipzig who is eager to cast his first vote.
It's a very good feeling. People have the possibility to achieve better living conditions, more money. That's the main hope of people in the east part of Germany.
This election is beginning to sound quite a bit like one in the United States. In Leipzig, I'm Melanie Brubaker.
On the eve of Germany's great unity election, the results of the recent U.S. midterm ballot were watched closely in Bonn, later discussed by a panel of American foreign policy experts.
One of them was Robin Laird of the Institute for Defense Analysis in Arlington, Virginia, who soothed German concern that the U.S. midterm elections could have influenced the close U.S.-German relations. Mr. Laird said in his lecture there was no need for such worries. After the conference, he explained to me,
"The elections just confirmed that there's a bipartisan consensus on the centrality of the German-U.S. relationship and complete support for the German unification process and for the underscoring the importance of a democratic Germany for the United States."
With German unification finalized, it was time now, Mr. Laird said, to review the future U.S.-German relations, and he added,
"In that context, we have to reach a new bargain about what collective defense is all about within the West. This will include out-of-area questions as well, but it's just one component of the entire restructuring of the issue."
No doubt, Mr. Laird said, the United States expected a stronger German military role within a Western context with regard to international crisis management. But there were no firm expectations voiced yet on the most desirable role for the Germans in that context. The Americans hadn't made up their minds yet.
I think this will be a key issue in U.S.-German, U.S.-European relations in the months ahead and years ahead about the German out-of-area role. But it's certainly conceivable that a political economic role will be far more significant than just a military role. But some military role will be necessary. But there is no consensus in the U.S. about that issue.
The Germans realize what is expected of them, but they argue that their constitution does not permit a deployment of German forces in regions outside NATO territory, like the Middle East. it's relatively easy to predict that Chancellor Helmut Kohl, should he be re-elected, will tackle the problem and try an amendment of the Constitution. But that needs a two-third majority in Parliament and thus the Social Democrat opposition's vote. They, too, are in the process of rethinking Germany's international role and its military participation in international peacekeeping efforts. So they could bury their present resistance and agree on a constitutional amendment, especially so should they win the elections. Alfred Schroeder reporting from Bonn.
America's position as superpower and world leader may be changing when it comes to geopolitics, but as a market, the U.S. is still arguably number one. So when anything happens to tighten access to the American consumer, that's bad news overseas.
The selling point of German cars, according to the many companies who build them, is most often summed up in the motto, mehr sein als Schein, or more performance than appearance. And this quality has its price. As a result, many German car makers say the new 10% tax on luxury cars costing over $30,000 could hurt their businesses in the United States. Others say the tax is the wrong response because it targets the Germans and not the Japanese. At BMW in Munich, spokesman Werner Rothfuss says his company will feel the effects of the tax.
Well, the new tax certainly puts a penalty on consumer benefits as well as limits choice. The market share of cars costing more than $30,000 and the tax income they generate is, I think, not significant in volume. Let me refer to the German ambassador to the United States. He stated that the effects of the new tax will be quite clearly discriminating. The tax applies to about 80% to European manufacturers and about 10% to U.S. cars and 10% to Japanese cars. So the real effect wouldn't be that much.
Rothfuss says BMW's models appear to upwardly mobile individuals, but adds this too can change.
We still think that the young and upward moving buyer can buy a BMW, but also the entrepreneur who tries to have a prestige and luxury sedan.
Altogether, BMW says it can understand the need for the American government to raise revenues, but notes the tax, which goes into effect at the start of the year, won't do the job it promises. In Munich, I'm Peggy Zeltz-Troutman.
S&L failures, loan write-offs, and unprofitability. That is, unfortunately, too often the story of banking in America these days. But Germany's had a banner bank year, despite the oil price shock, lowering stock market averages, and the early costs of unity. One of Germany's best bank performers is OKO Bank. The name derives from the German for economy and the environment. In fact, business is so good at the OKO Bank that it can't find enough customers to lend money to, as correspondent Mike Shea learned during a recent chat. And that's made for a different kind of headache.
We have about 15 million that we cannot lend in special projects, and we have to give this money in the capital market. For instance, we lend it to other banks.
Too much money is the problem, according to OKO Bank spokesman Torsten Martin. Established just 2 years ago, the bank now has 24,000 clients, including many in America. OKO Bank was set up as an alternative to regular German banks who lend money to clients such as defense contractors or nuclear industries. But not enough individuals or businesses are coming forward with environmentally sound projects that meet lending criteria. Ironically, this means OKO Bank now finds itself investing in the very banks its clients don't like. And some customers, according to Torsten Martin, call that a sellout of principles.
This criticism is correct, I think. But what I say is that we need about 3 or 5 years to found the bank, the direction of the development of the bank. And if you look to the financial figures of the bank, to the balance sheet, for instance, you see that more and more capital goes in the credit area to finance special projects.
Martin admits some shareholders are pulling out. But he says the situation is not serious, the bank continues to grow, and next year will even open another branch. In Frankfurt, I'm Mike Shea.
The price of unification is being felt in some pretty odd places across what used to be East Germany, even at the writing desks of tens of thousands of companies and average citizens. Why? Why, it's all in the name or names of unity, tradition, and history.
It's costing Germany a lot of money and extra work, because they like to name streets after people.
They would find it easier if they adopted the widespread American custom of having Fifth Avenues and Elm and Pine Streets. As it is, every time there is a political upheaval, they have to change street signs. Firms have to change their address books and letterheads. Just as streets and squares named after Adolf Hitler were changed after World War II, those named in East Germany after communist heroes are getting their old names back or new ones. In East Berlin alone, 150 names are being changed. Ho Chi Minh Strasse, named after the Vietnamese communist leader, is becoming Weissenseerstrasse again. A street named after Otto Grotewohl, East Germany's first communist head of government, is getting back the famous name Wilhelmstrasse. So many names are being changed that the Junge Welt, which used to be the newspaper of the Communist Youth Organization, said sarcastically it would not be surprised if the East Berlin telephone book eliminated the 85 Marxes and Engels listed in it. The changes do make sense. The Germans are trying to remove reminders of the country's 45-year division and restore symbols of unity. In this spirit, the body of Frederick the Great is being returned from West Germany to his palace in Potsdam.
I told him to stop drinking on the job.
Joseph Fleming in Bonn.
In New York, I'm Lee Murphy. Thanks for listening.
Hey, folks, obviously we're in deep doo-doo here, as one might say. Everything is breaking down. We have two broken tape machines, a broken phone. What else do we have? A broken cart machine. But our cassette player is working fine, and we'll be right back after we go to the chapel and pray, I guess. I don't know. It's Dub Day on the Stony Brook campus here. So, double A. 632-6901. I want you to listen to something really sick. This is a sick tape machine. Actually, what we're listening to right now is a master dub session that first aired on this radio station back in 1983. Done with Mike Juhas and myself, Eric Corley, back on a show called The Voice of Long Island. Occasionally, we just sort of flipped our lids and made all kinds of sound effects and things like that. I just happened to come across this tape a few days ago. I was driving around today in my car listening to it. Boy, the looks you get. I just got a great idea. No, not whipping people or anything like that. Communication. Yeah, communication, that's the key to life. Or one of the keys, anyway. Let's see if Mike is home. You know, I haven't talked to him in a while, and he's out there by himself, out in Milwaukee. No friends, no family, nothing. Just living the life of a solitary man. Let's call and cheer him up. What do you say? I love surprising people. I'm so good at it, too, you know? That's his phone ringing. That's Mike's phone ringing in Milwaukee. Oh, the magic of phones, the magic of radio, the magic of music.
Hello?
Hi, Mike.
Eric.
Mike, it's Eric. You got my voice right away. How are you?
Well, I was asleep, actually.
Yeah? Well, that's great. Yeah, I was just thinking of you because I'm sitting here at the radio station playing
wait.
Dub music here.
That you woke me up?
What?
You said it's great that you woke me up?
Hold on.
Ja Rastafari.
We just played the Ja Rastafari part here.
Oh. Yes.
That's something you're well known for. It's 10:26, but out where you are, it's only 9:26. So,
Hey, man, you're on the air now, aren't you?
That's right. I'm on the radio, broadcasting to 250,000 listeners as always, and I'm very pleased to say.
Does that mean that I am too?
Oh, Mike, would I do that to you? I mean, I am insulted. You would sit there in your what was it, chair, bed, whatever you're in Milwaukee.
Sitting,
you would
I'm
sit there
bed,
and accuse me of putting you on the air without telling you first, Mike. I am surprised at you. I am surprised. I am also shocked. Hurt would be another word.
I wouldn't say dismayed,
but I might.
In your voice.
Yes, well...
But you've done this to me so many times.
Yeah, well, Mike, that was the past. This is now, okay?
Okay, well...
It's always been the past in the past. Now it's now. You see? Don't you see the difference?
Well, what's the topic for tonight?
Well, right now the topic seems to be broken machinery. Everything has... both tape machines are kablooey. The cart machine died.
Uh-huh.
The telephone seems to be working again, which is good.
I'm not ready to die myself.
Yeah, one of the CD players is gone. About the only thing we have left is talent. Oh, yes, we always have talent here at WUSB. And we have Moscow Mailbag, and we have call-ins, and we have the tripods coming up, and all kinds of things like that.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Let me ask you a serious question, okay?
Why? I mean, what?
I just wanted to ask you something. Have you ever had French food?
I don't know. I suppose I've had crepes and stuff.
Yeah, it's weird stuff, isn't it? I just had some today, you know? I had it before, but I just can't understand. How can people eat that stuff and survive? It's so.
First time you ever had yogurt?
No, I didn't even have yogurt. I had these,
No. This is several years ago. The first time you ever had yogurt was on the air.
That's right. I do remember that, Mike. I do remember that. And if you recall, I was sick for 3 days afterwards.
Well, I don't remember that.
I remember that.
You know, you woke me up.
Yeah.
I suppose I better explain why a guy is asleep at 9:30.
Well, we already explained to the folks how, you know, you're sort of leading a very solitary life out there, studying for, I believe, the priesthood. And
not quite exactly, no.
We've told them all about you, but go ahead.
Oh, no, I was up this morning about 4 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
I went out to Illinois, and I was taking some pictures and stuff. And I just got back home a little bit ago, took a quick little shower, and then I just got to bed, and then what happens? But the phone rings.
Really? And who was it?
You.
Oh, it's a self-referential story. I get it. Okay.
Yes, yeah.
Interesting. And so now, of course, you're speaking to me. But you see, that's what friends are for, to bother you when you're in the shower or when you're asleep or something like that.
You can get me in the shower, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, remember that time you slipped on the bar of soap? I still chuckle every time I think of that.
Will not put a telephone in my shower.
How many stitches was that again? 14, right?
14 stitches, yeah.
Yeah, that was something else. And you had to throw out the soap, too.
Yeah, it kind of got bloody.
Well, there's no point disgusting listeners here, but
and it got smushed as well.
You know, Mike, something weird is happening in the airwaves tonight. I was driving back here from New York City this evening, and I noticed I couldn't get USB at all. I was getting a station from Philadelphia instead at our frequency.
Oh, really? WRTI?
Whatever it is. They were coming in like...
No, that's not it. That's,
like gangbusters.
That's up in Rensselaer. Oh, I know the one...
Someone's pounding at the door.
Oh. The one is the jazz station.
Yeah, they're playing jazz. I was wondering why Dave Brown was playing jazz on the radio.
They're picking up a Philadelphia station, huh?
Yeah, they were picking that up, and I've noticed that there's some other atmospheric conditions going on, too.
You know, it's also true out here, because we were picking up some strange stuff when we were down in Illinois.
Uh-huh. Well, I'd like to appeal to anybody listening to us that ordinarily does not listen to us and finds themselves out of our normal listening range.
Well, wait a minute.
To
why
call
don't we explain
us.
Where we're coming from?
Well, where are we coming from?
Stony Brook.
A little left of center, I think, yeah. Stony Brook, New York, Long Island, USA, Earth. I don't know how far the signal's going to get tonight.
Well, it's gotten out to Wisconsin.
Has it? Oh, you mean by the phone? Oh, Mike. Yeah. You're joking with me here.
I am. Yeah.
Yeah, you always were good at that.
Yes, yes.
This is one heck of a dub session. Do you remember doing this? This is back in 1983.
Remember doing what?
Playing dub music for 2 hours, I believe, without saying a word.
What are you doing? Are you playing it now?
It's right underneath us, yeah.
I can't hear it.
Well, of course you can't, because you can't hear the radio.
Push the little mute button.
If I push the mute button, you won't hear anything. What I'll do is I will turn my microphone off for just a second, and then you'll be able to hear it.
Okay.
Here we go.
Early, early this morning, I arose from my slumber. And when I looked through my belly button window, they were all around, all around.
Jar any memories, Mike?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Memories you would have preferred to have left unjarred, I guess, eh?
Oh, that's a good one, yeah.
Ah, yes.
Ringing bells and everything. That's why you were saying Ja Rastafari.
Yeah, because you had come in with the Ja Rastafari at just that point. In fact, I think those are the only words spoken.
Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay.
I was down in Illinois, as I say. I was down in two adjacent towns named after a very, very famous actor. The towns were Wilburn and La Rose.
Really?
Yes. Didn't he play one of the tripod people? Wasn't he Howard?
I haven't been following that as closely as I should.
Oh.
I don't know why not.
Oh, well. Oh, well. Yeah, well, anyway, that's where I was. I was down in, I wasn't down in deepest, darkest central Illinois, but certainly north.
Uh-huh. Well, Mike, it's been good talking to you, but I understand the ratings are dipping right now, so I'm going to have to go to another feature, because we have to keep, you know, the attention span of the young people today isn't very long.
Well, that's right, and thanks for waking me up.
Well, no problem. I mean, it's always good to be awake, don't you agree? That's what I try to tell my listeners here, is to stay awake. In fact, we had a guy on last week that was saying nothing but wake up.
Eric, you know, probably what I'll do is I'll try calling you at home one morning next week at about, 10, 11 o'clock in the morning. And wake you up.
That's not very nice at all, Mike. That's just when I'm getting to sleep, usually.
Uh-huh. See what I mean?
Well, I'll tell you what. You're doing a radio show out there now, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Well, what time is your radio show on?
Tomorrow evening at 6.
Really? Sunday evenings at 6. That's prime time in Milwaukee.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, you're welcome to call me and, make a fool of me on the air there, too.
Well,
you want to do that.
That's okay. I think as far as the foolishness is concerned, I'm the biggest one right now, huh?
Ah. Well, that's quite an admission.
Well, thanks for the dub session.
Hey, no problem. We're airing a bit of nostalgia tonight. Mike, we will be seeing you on the airwaves again sometime soon, I hope.
Yeah, well, you know, I wander in every Tuesday morning and I do the weather forecast for Jim Dexter.
And about what time is that?
It's just before 8 o'clock, your time. It's the Milwaukee area weather forecast.
And what's the weather like now?
I don't know. I'm asleep.
Ah.
Well, it was chilly today, but the skies are clear. We've got a full moon out there.
We got one, too.
Oh, how about that?
Oh,
well, that must
boy,
mean
that's
we're
something.
In the same universe after all.
Well,
huh?
I mean, I know the weather is similar in various places, but the fact that we both have full moons means something. That's neat. Okay, then I guess
that means that we're about in the same universe, just like we really weren't too sure at one point.
Well,
but yeah, I guess
we're in coercion or something like that. Yeah,
yes,
Joel Block has a term for it.
Or something, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, Mike, it's been great talking to you, and hopefully, you'll pass this way in real life sometime soon.
Oh yeah,
we'll do another dub session.
I'll see what I can do.
All right.
All right. All right.
And remember, Mike, this is only a dream.
Oh, okay. So, like, when I wake up tomorrow morning, I won't remember any of this?
Oh, you'll remember it, but it's only a dream.
Well, the best dreams you don't remember, so I hope I don't. Good night, Eric.
Good night, Michael.
Bye, 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 bye.
Crying after tossing and turning and yearning the whole night long. Pretty baby,
since you went away,
I haven't spent a happy day.
This is your program.
I wake up crying.
No. This is your program.
And wandering just long and wrong.
Listen, I'm not going to say it again. This is your program.
This is your program, Moscow Mailbag. Joe Adamoff to answer your questions.
But before I do that, I'd like to say that I'm just back from a 2 weeks visit to Seattle, Salt Lake City, and Phoenix. Well, I'm a bit tired after 41 appearances on radio, television, and before live audiences. Well, my impressions, I can say I'm overwhelmed. At the Latter-day Saints Church in Seattle, at Rotary Clubs, and elsewhere, I was given a standing ovation, something that would have been impossible 2 years ago. The distrust, the mutual fear, both have gone. We are partners, and we're not enemies anymore. They applauded not me, but the changes that have taken place in my country, the changes that have taken place in Eastern Europe. And the applause, you know, actually sent shivers down my spine, but it was a pleasant sensation.
Well, our first question comes from George Nikolov of Rexdale, Ontario. Does Mikhail Gorbachev and his wife speak English?
As far as I know, they do not. Otherwise, they would have been using the language and speak English during their visits abroad. Incidentally, did you know that Mikhail Gorbachev met Raisa at Moscow University? He was in the law department and she in the department of philosophy. They met in 1951, and 2 years later they got married. Raisa taught philosophy for 20 years. Their daughter, Irina, is a physician, and so is their son-in-law, and they have two granddaughters, Ksenia and Anastasia.
George also asks, I heard you're going over to a market economy. What does this mean?
Well, you know, George, so much has been said and written on the subject that I'll try to summarize if I can. Well, we feel there is no alternative to a transition to a market economy. That's very important. We must make our economy consumer-oriented and not producer-oriented as it was before. We must give our people an incentive to work better and to produce better goods. The state-owned enterprises under a market economy will be owned by shareholders, by stockholders, also by collectives, that is, by the people who work there, and there will be some private owners, too, of smaller enterprises and services. Prices. These will be controlled by the end of 1992 only on such basic consumer goods as bread, meat, dairy products, medicine, and transport. Also, state controls on prices will be gradually done away with. In agriculture, the collective and state farms will decide for themselves whether to dissolve or to go on functioning. Emphasis is on leasing land by the farmers with the right to inheritance, although many economists in our country believe that land should be owned by the peasants. A new idea for our market economy is that foreign companies now may have their own enterprises in the Soviet Union. Now, what would remain in the hands of the government? Such things as transport, communications, the defense industry, energy, credits and finances, customs, the regulation of prices on, key types of raw materials, and also the export of oil, gas, and such things as gold and diamonds. Also under government control and ownership will be healthcare, education, science, and culture. We believe that when all this comes about, we'll have a voluntary union of sovereign republics in a renewed federation. I must also say I think that Mr. Gorbachev's plan has not been met favorably by those who believe in a quicker transition and more radical reforms. Mr. Yeltsin, for instance, has denounced it.
Keith Willey of Long Beach, California asks, is the use of VCRs popular in the USSR?
I'm afraid VCRs are few and far between, but we are increasing their output. Last year we produced only something like 125,000, which is nothing for a population our size. Next year we'll make something like 500,000. And I must also say that prices for VCRs have skyrocketed on the black market. But since I'm on that subject, I think it'll be in place to say that we do have something like 1.5 to 2 television sets per family in the country, 2.5 radio sets per family, and something like 160 million cable radios. Yes, cable radios. And then another interesting thing is that most of our radio sets have shortwave bands.
MJ Tevens of Little Britain, Ontario asks, how are rental rates decided upon?
Rental rates were decided by the powers that be back in 1928 and have remained unchanged since then, which doesn't make much sense, does it? We unfortunately do not take into consideration the quality of the home, the amenities in it, its location, and so on. The determining factor is the size, in other words, the number of square feet of floor space.
Check for trouble. Please make a note of it. 2467901 has been changed to a non-published number. Please try your call again later, and an operator will answer.
Okay, what would the average monthly rental rate be? What percentage would that be of the average income?
The average family in Moscow, say husband, wife, and one or two children, live in a two-room apartment. That is two rooms plus kitchen. More often than not, both husband and wife work. They pay about 12 to 15 rubles a month for rent. That includes heating, hot water, cable radio, garbage removal, and so on. Well, 15 rubles would be roughly 4 or 5% of the family's monthly income. And what is paid in the form of rent covers only about a third of the sums that the government spends on the maintenance of housing. And believe me, this so-called maintenance leaves much to be desired. The entrances, the stairwells are often shoddy with chipped plaster and chipped paint, with notices plastered on the walls and doors, and often broken glass on the main door. Well, that's why we, I think, are beginning to ponder over the idea of selling the apartments to their owners. Maybe they'd take better care of the houses.
Pete Giordano of Morgantown, West Virginia asks, how do the Soviet people look upon the position of the U.S. in Saudi Arabia?
The Soviet people want a political solution to this very dangerous and inflammable situation. Of course, it's all very well to defend Saudi Arabia, but what troubles us is that we constantly read about the possibility of a shooting war breaking out if the United States forces are attacked. Now, this is very dangerous because any minor incident could flare up into a war, the consequences of which would be hard to predict and certainly would be disastrous. We are constantly trying to tell our American friends, don't be too trigger happy. Take advice from a country which had lost 60 times more lives than did the United States in World War II. We firmly believe that Hussein could be strangled by an effective economic blockade. Now, when Hussein offered to sell oil to the United States at almost half price, I think this was proof that the economic pinch is beginning to tell. Then take this into consideration. There are so many nuclear power stations in the world today. In France, 75% of the electricity is produced by nuclear power stations. And a major conflict could be exceedingly dangerous. You'd have dozens of Chernobyls on your hands. So let's take it easy. Political and economic means certainly can solve the problem.
Mark Schlossman of Santa Monica, California asks, do citizens of the USSR recycle their products?
Not too much. You know, in the house I live in, many people collect old newspapers and magazines and exchange them for new and hard-to-get books that are in great demand. Well, glass jars and bottles may be returned for a nominal price, but newspapers and magazines are recycled, not into paper, but into cardboard. We will begin recycling paper into paper only in 1992. Well, if you take our garbage, about 96.5% is wasted. Then we lose millions of tons of ferrous metals and no end of tons of non-ferrous metals. And anywhere you look in our country, you see piles of scrap metal.
Robert Fraser of Massachusetts writes, I hope you won't give up all your social programs with your proposed market economy. I broke both arms this past summer, and although I was in hospital just 3 days with one arm operated on, the cost is running between $8,000 and $10,000. My medical insurance covers 40% of these bills.
Robert, we have no intention of giving up our social programs, be it free medical care or free education, or old age pensions toward which we do not contribute anything while working. What we are aiming at is to improve these services, improve the quality of medical aid, not only in the hospitals, but also on the level of what you would call your family doctor. You often come up against a case when the surgeon that operates you is highly skilled, yet there is no one to take care of you in the ward when you're recuperating. Not enough nurses, not enough orderlies, that is a fact. I recently mentioned this, and it may sound paradoxical, but you in the United States spend 4.7 times as much as we do on health care. Today, many people say that it would be, I think, good to introduce a small sum for a stay in the hospital, and this may help to pay the nurses more, and they'd be more happy to work in a hospital. There's also a tendency for our physicians to go over to cooperatives, where they earn more. Many clinics and hospitals have, well, I would say, not enough appropriate equipment. They're not equipped as they should be. There's also much room for improvement in education. Half of our schools in the country have no central heating or running water or sewage. A quarter of the students study in two shifts, some even in three shifts. And only about 17% of our school graduates go on to colleges and universities. We have to raise the professional skills of our teachers, and the students in our schools and colleges have to be taught to think for themselves, to think creatively. So you see, we have problems galore.
David Rodenberg of Vienna, Virginia, who is 9 years old, asks, what type of questions do Russian boys and girls my age have about the United States?
I think, David, you ought to be put into my book of records as one of the youngest listeners. Well, what do they ask? They usually ask things like, what games do you play? How do you dress? How many classes do you have every day? What do you have for lunch? They sometimes ask what children's organizations you have in the States. You know, they all belong to the Young Pioneers here. They learned recently about your Boy Scouts that played host to the children, Soviet children, who were victims of the Chernobyl nuclear power plant catastrophe. One kid I know that lives in our house asked me, how do they live in the United States and what it's like? I think this is typical.
Now, there are questions from listeners, too numerous to name them all, who want to know what we think of awarding Mr. Gorbachev the Nobel Prize.
I think there's no doubt in anybody's mind that Mr. Gorbachev certainly deserves the prize. You know, I felt this when I was in the States about a week or so ago. People here think exactly the same way, but they also, of course, show anxiety for the state of our economy. Our housewives cannot be indifferent to our empty shelves in the stores. Now, if you ask our people, does Mr. Gorbachev deserve the prize, the reaction will be positive. Why? Because he was instrumental in democratizing Eastern Europe, in bringing down the Berlin Wall. If it wasn't for him and for his policy of new thinking, of letting the nations follow the road of their choice, things today would have remained just as they were. People here realize that the changes in Eastern Europe promoted better relations between your country and mine. The changes in Eastern Europe made for more trust between the United States and the Soviet Union, made the summits a regular business-like meeting of leaders. Now, what Mr. Gorbachev did was to generally improve our image as a nation. We're building a society today that is based on such pillars as human rights, democracy, and a government based on law and nothing but the law.
That was Joe Adamoff answering your questions on Moscow Mailbag. And address your letters to Radio Moscow, Moscow, the USSR. You couldn't do better than write us that letter. Your comments on the show are welcome. Mailbag is on the air every Saturday, Sunday, and Wednesday.
Is pot an addictive drug?
You'll notice Joe Adamoff doesn't answer that question. And you are listening to Brain Damage here on WUSB, Stony Brook, where it's 6 degrees Celsius and 43 on the Fahrenheit scale. And there's a full moon, I understand. Or something like that. Why doesn't this calendar we have the phases of the moon? Look outside, folks. Is the moon full? Somebody tell me. I think it is, but can't be 100% certain. Shall we look at what's happening in the world and then take some phone calls, perhaps? Make some phone calls and maybe hear what the tripods are up to this week, huh? Yeah, it sounds like fun. 632-6901. As I said before, our signal is doing all kinds of weird things tonight. I was getting a distant station instead of us fairly close to where we are. So it's possible, not likely, but it's possible that our signal is traveling to some far-off exotic place. So if you're hearing this, you're wondering what in the world's going on, and you're not from around here, then give us a call. Our number is 516-632-6901. And of course, if you're local to the area and you do know what's going on, call us anyway. But you might want to leave off the 516. What do you think? 516-632-6901, and be prepared to let that phone ring for a while. Yeah. You know, dub sessions, they work no matter when. No matter when you air them, no matter when you listen to them. Just immortalized. Boy. Anyway, what's happening in the world? It's 3 minutes to 11 o'clock. That's not news in itself, but here's the news. The U.S. is rejecting a bid by Iraq to link its withdrawal from Kuwait with an Israeli pullout from occupied Arab territories. Vice President Quayle told CNN today that Palestine is not an issue on the table. Official Iraqi news reports say Saddam Hussein is accepting an offer from President Bush to discuss the Persian Gulf crisis. That's nice. But the reports link the crisis to the Israeli-Palestinian issue. The countdown is reaching its final hours at Cape Canaveral, but the chances of Space Shuttle Columbia's liftoff have gotten slimmer. That orbiter is scheduled to head into space at 1:28 Eastern Time. But officials say a cloud layer is reducing the launch possibility to 30%. With a crew of seven, Columbia is carrying an astronomical observatory. Well, Germans, remember them? They get their first chance in almost 60 years to vote as one nation tomorrow. If you listened to Germany Today earlier, you would have known that. I wouldn't have to tell you. Chancellor Helmut Kohl reminded his countrymen of the high price they've paid for democracy. Kohl's Christian Democrats are widely favored in the voting. So, I guess you could say in Germany they will get a lump of coal this year. German justice officials have a warrant for the arrest of former East German leader Erich Honecker. I could swear I saw him in the mall earlier. I could swear I saw him there. Maybe I should call somebody. But authorities charged the ousted communist ruler personally gave shoot-to-kill orders at the Berlin Wall. Honecker, who's said to be at a hospital near Berlin, is being accused of manslaughter. And it's being called one of Canada's biggest robberies. Police in Montreal say armed thieves made off with nearly $13.7 million worth of gold and other valuables stolen from an airplane at Dorval Airport. Right. Officials say the robbers ambushed the private jet as it was taxiing toward a hangar. The plane was chartered by Brinks of Canada. Oh, that's not what an Air Force pilot is saying. He's alive and well tonight after his F-16 jet crashed at a military airfield in Southern California. Officials say the pilot was on a routine flight when he had to eject from the plane because of unspecified trouble. Probably something marital, you know. He was flying to San Diego from Luke Air Force Base in Arizona. Hey, brother, man. Hey, what you say? And the National League of Cities is the latest group to protest Arizona's rejection of a Martin Luther King holiday. Now, the league today canceled its 1991 convention in Phoenix. It says it will consider having Arizona as its convention site in the future if the state adopts a holiday to honor the late civil rights leader. And a friend of Burt Lancaster says it's still too early. And it's 6 degrees Celsius. That's 43 on the Fahrenheit scale. We're expecting it to be partly cloudy tonight, low in the low to mid-30s. Sunday, increasing cloudiness, high in the low 50s. And on Sunday night, mostly cloudy and cold, low in the mid to upper 30s. Monday, cloudy, breezy, and chilly with rain likely by evening. High in the mid-40s. Chance of rain is 60% by evening. But I didn't have to tell you that. Speaking of not telling people things, the Daily News publisher told the chairman of the Metropolitan Transit Authority today that he must seek an injunction if transit workers threaten to strike in protest of newspaper sales in the subways. How's that, folks? That's right. No trains because they're selling newspapers. WUSB Storybook. What? What was that? Did you hear a voice? I heard a voice.
WUSB, Stony Brook.
Anyway, publisher James Hoge? All right, let's take a vote. H-O-G-E. What do you think? Hoge? Hoagie? Can't name himself Smith or something, eh? Publisher James H. sent MTA chief Robert Kiley. Yeah, that's a nice, simple name, Robert Kiley. A strongly worded letter warning him that it's illegal for transit workers to strike. He said Kylie is required to seek an injunction. if a strike is threatened. H's letter resulted from the furor over a temporary court order allowing hawkers to sell the strike-bound daily news in train stations as long as they stay within 10 feet of newsstands.
Morning, class.
Morning, teacher.
Now, as usual, we will begin with roll call. Who have we here? Smokey?
Present, teacher.
Herbie?
Yeah, teacher.
Mila?
I'm a teacher.
Good.
Is pot an addictive drug?
I want us to think about what we did over the holidays.
Hey, teacher.
Yes.
I learn about family news, teacher.
Oh.
Where they use land they never used to use before and grow something that earned plenty of money, teacher.
Oh?
Something called...
Oh.
What about the teacher?
Smokey?
I was learning about the same thing still in a teacher. I tried some studies still in a teacher. Before I walk my book, you see teacher, I get a piece of paper, you know. And I build one strip and take a whip. I build one strip and take a whip. I roll a little strip and take a whip.
Okay.
I roll a little strip and take a whip. Take a whip up at the same similia.
Go.
A whip up at the same similia.
Go. Mila?
Yes, teacher?
Ten. Well, teacher, over the holidays, teacher, I have been studying about the music, teacher.
Yes.
So, teacher, give me some rhythm. A long time, no pizza.
Rhythm, teacher.
Oh?
Rhythm with music, teacher.
Oh?
Teacher, I get to understand, you know, that the same thing here what Smokey them talking about, teacher.
Mm, yes.
Go well with music, teacher.
Ah.
And teacher, that makes sense.
Sense.
And teacher, you see this thing does make you feel
so high. I'm feeling high.
You don't believe me, teacher?
I'm feeling high, so high.
One draw. Sit here, teacher, take one little
draw.
Roll a little sleep and take a whip. Boom! Roll a little sleep and take a whip.
What is this class coming to?
Teacher.
Yes.
Yes, teacher, you have to believe. Because, teacher, hey, bread and man, hey, what I say, I give us some more, you say.
Mila, what are you talking about?
It makes sense, teacher. Really makes sense.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense when you see something like, that isn't where it's supposed to be, that you want to do something about it. You know? I was walking through the supermarket the other day, and I saw this whole big, large pile of daily news just sitting there, you know? And I wanted to go to the manager, and I wanted to say, hey, manager, you fascist pig, what are you doing selling this newspaper here? It, you know, plans strikes against its workers, brings in scabs from other states, and is generally looked upon with disdain by every living, breathing organism this side of the Mississippi. How dare you? How dare you, I say again, sell this thing in stores? And, you know, I came very close to doing that. Very close. Manager wasn't in, but, I won't theorize as to what he was doing instead. It suddenly came to me, you know, maybe it's better. Maybe it's better that there be a really big pile of daily news. Daily newses? What do you say? I don't know. Piles of newspapers. Maybe it's better that they be there and that people see them and not buy them, because obviously they weren't buying them. You know, they were just passing them by and not taking them. And it looked really pathetic to see, you know, one copy of Newsday, two copies of the Times, and 55 copies of the Daily News. So I guess what this boils down to is you give people a choice. You know, you don't make decisions for them. You don't say, we're going to take this off the shelf because it's bad for you. Rather, you let people decide on the individual level, and you say, you know, boycott this thing if you want to, and if you want to, we think it's good. And apparently lots and lots of people agree. I think it's better to, you know, to reach a decision that way. That's sort of what we do here at USB. We believe in giving people choice. Choice as to what kind of music you hear. Choice as to what you want to talk about. Sort of what we're doing here tonight. We're going to give you choice. We've got two callers on the line. Let's make that five, and then we'll take some phone calls. How's that? It's 8 minutes after 11 o'clock, and we're talking about all kinds of things, I guess. I don't know. What's up in your personal lives? What do you think of this Bush-Saddam thing that's going on? Last week, we had a contest, and we took all the entries for that. But this week, we're going to be, if you can believe it, a little more serious. Such as, are you ready for the draft? And questions along that line. We'll also try to reach Baghdad again. All right, 632-6901. Let's get those phones lit. Gonna go to the tripods and we'll be right back at you. All earth problems in the overall Radio Free Long Island, in coordination with the Three Village Tobacco Farms, presents the thrilling adventures of the Tripod Family, the story of one of America's most illustrious families and their struggle to find peace and happiness in the suburbs of Long Island. All right, all right, all right, we know. We know it's all screwed up, all right? There's something wrong here, something seriously wrong. There's a virus loose in the station and everything is breaking down at once. But fortunately, we still have our dub mix. We're going to move that to another facility, and that will come right back, but we still need more phone calls. 632-6901. Give us a call.
Get up in the morning not to polish my woods, and to keep my house looking good. Work hard all day, so I like to play with my pussy and my Jimmy Beam. With my pussy and my Jimmy Beam. Oh, oh. Give me some of that London pride. The pussy who's by my side. I need a pussy who's by my side. Oh, 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 oh.
What no be my palaver? Me and my woman, that kind of woman. I go rotting club la bamba. Suck the Jimmy B.
Okay, let's give it another try, why don't we? The tripod's on USB.
I go be there. Ganja Mahai.
Radio Free Long Island, in coordination with the Three Village Tobacco Farms, presents the thrilling adventures of the Tripod Family, the story of one of America's most illustrious families and their struggle to find peace and happiness in the suburbs of Long Island. As we left our friends last week, the Tripods were still looking for a house to live in, and they have just looked at one. Now they've returned to Charlie's house and they're relaxing in the backyard, and we hear...
I don't know if it was such a good idea for you folks to say no on that house my cousin Herb showed you.
If you had only seen it, Charlie, you would have understood. You would have said the same thing.
Yeah, not only was it right smack on the Long Island Expressway, but it had no heat, no hot water, no electricity, no windows. We wouldn't even be able to get cable television over there.
That's right. No, a house like that simply is not a Tripod home.
Correct.
That's simply all there is to it.
Well, I don't know about that, Kathy. I mean, you and Howard really should take whatever you can get. Beggars can't be choosers, after all.
Now, wait a minute, Charlie. Who are you to call us tripods beggars?
Well, I didn't mean anything, but...
Who are you to call anybody beggars?
It's only an expression.
Who are you to call anybody anything?
Wait, Pop. No, just calm down a minute, Pop. Charlie didn't mean anything. That's just an expression.
That's right. Tripods have never been beggars.
And we never will be, either. But we are choosers.
Oh, there's no question about that one, Howard. Oh, we have very high standards, and I'm afraid that that house on the Long Island Expressway just doesn't cut the butter.
Well, I still think you should reconsider. That house isn't all that bad. And besides, my cousin Herb won't talk to me until I get you to change your minds.
Oh, so that's it. I knew there had to be some other reason why you wanted us to take that house.
You mean your cousin takes it personally every time somebody decides against one of his houses?
Boy, he sounds as if he's almost as screwed up as you are, Charlie.
I'll ignore that, Mr. Tripod. Now look, folks, this is the only house that my cousin has available. It's the only house he's ever had. In fact, he's been living in that house for over 30 years now, and if he doesn't find somebody who wants it, he may never get out.
Nothing doing, Charlie. Our minds are made up.
You know who would be perfect for a house like that?
Who?
Your Uncle Jonathan.
Why is that, Howard?
Oh, I don't know. The two just seem to fit, that's all.
Are you taking another swipe at Uncle Jonathan, Howard?
Well, why shouldn't I? He's the one who got us into this mess in the first place, isn't he?
He sure is.
I think he deserves all the swipes he gets.
Well, let's try to act like faintly civilized people for a change and just forget all our hostilities.
And find a place to live. I mean, I'd like to keep you folks over here. I really would, but I just don't have the room. And besides that,
it's... Oh, don't make excuses, Charlie. You've done more than enough already.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And I only hope we can repay you someday for... Oh.
What is it, Howard?
Oh, this looks like it might be a good house for us, Kathy. Right over here on page 57B12.
Oh, I left my glasses in the other room. I'll be right
here. Let me see that. 17-room mansion located on 64-acre plot in Central Coram. Let's see.
Central where?
I think he means Coram, Kathy.
Oh, Coram, I've heard of. What did you say, Charlie?
I said Coram. That's how you're supposed to pronounce it.
Really? I didn't know that. I always thought it was Coram.
Well, actually, most people throughout the world pronounce it the way you said it.
Coram?
Right. But people on the North Shore of Long Island always call it Coram. Everybody knows that.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yes.
I didn't know that either.
Well, regardless of how you say it, this sounds like a pretty good deal. Look, it's only $200 a month.
Well, then go call him up, Howard.
Yeah.
And be quick about it, for goodness sakes.
Okay. I had an aunt who used to live in Coram.
Really?
Yeah, that was a few years ago. You know, she was one of those, what do you call it? Born-again Christians. Yeah, that's it. She was one of those.
Oh, really? Is that so?
Yeah. But then she gave all that up, and she sold the house and went over to Las Vegas for about 2 years.
How about that?
Yeah, last year she got tired of that, and she moved to South Dakota.
Oh?
Yeah, became a born-again Christian again.
Wait a minute now. What do you call that?
Call what?
When a born-again Christian is born again twice. Actually, three times. Thrice.
Oh, I never really thought about that, Kathy.
It must be something like a born-again and again Christian. Or a double-born-again Christian.
Or maybe it's a born-again double Christian. Or something like that.
I'm going to have to look that one up. Well, that's pretty interesting. Oh, Howard. Did you talk to them?
Yeah.
What did you find out?
Well, you can stop hoping. It was a misprint. They wanted $200,000 a month, not $200,000.
We don't have that kind of money.
I know that, Pop. And it looks like we don't have that kind of house either.
Boy, that's too bad. But how come I didn't hear you talking to anybody on the phone?
Well, there were so many calls because of that advertisement that they had to make a tape recording telling everyone that it was all a mistake.
Huh. We're really betting a thousand. You know that?
I think you folks have the worst luck of anybody I've ever met. Reminds me of my old uncle, Stephanie.
We don't want to hear about your crazy relatives, Charlie. Huh. We've got our own problems to take care of.
Pop doesn't mean that, Charlie.
Oh, yes, I do.
No, you don't, Pop. It's just that we have to start figuring out... Oh, wait a minute. Now, just wait a minute. Kathy.
Yes, Howard?
When you rented out our house next door to the Stanley family, how long was their lease for?
Well, I believe they said they only needed it for the summer. Oh, Howard, I forgot all about that.
According to this calendar on my wall, the summer ends in about 2 weeks.
2 weeks? But what are we going to do in the meantime?
Do you know how long it's been since we've gone on a vacation, Kathy? I think it's about time.
Then it's official. The tripods are going on vacation.
And so the tripods decide to go on vacation. Where will they go? And what will happen to them when they get there? You want to be with us next week when we hear Charlie say...
Well, I hear Whitney Island is very nice this time of year.
That's next week on The Tripod Family, a presentation of Radio Free Long Island and the Three Village Tobacco Farms. This is Don Topeka.
Is pot an addictive drug? I'm David Freudberg with Sobering Thoughts. Smoking a marijuana joint or puffing on a pipe stuffed with pot is widely considered less harmful than use of so-called hard drugs. And some believe that even the practice of regularly smoking grass does not induce actual addiction. But that's a myth, according to physician Martha Morrison, who directs the Adolescent Chemical Dependency Program at Ridgeview Institute outside Atlanta.
Clearly defined physical withdrawal syndrome is evident from marijuana addiction, and we see that in the adolescents, and it includes things like insomnia, tremulousness, increased blood pressure, increased heart rate, increased respiration. We also see some very clear emotional symptoms as far as blocking of thought processes and thought fragmentation that occur in marijuana withdrawal. And we do see that with adolescents. It's just that they're not life-threatening and they're not to the severity that they need to be medically dealt with.
Signs of emotional withdrawal include extreme mood swings and a condition mental health experts call free-floating anxiety, where a person is on edge. These symptoms can be uncomfortable, and for relief, some marijuana addicts simply light up another joint. With Sobering Thoughts, I'm David Freudberg.
Everyone's heard of drunk driving, but what about drugged driving? I'm David Freudberg with Sobering Thoughts. Driving under the influence doesn't always mean under the influence of alcohol. You can be dangerously impaired behind the wheel after using small amounts of marijuana.
If you secretly wonder whether you're in trouble with drugs or alcohol, here's a quick checklist to consider. I'm David Freudberg with Sobering Thoughts. A recent publication of the National Institute on Drug Abuse spells out some...
This is not the David Freudberg show. Sorry. Get out of here. I don't know what's going on here, folks. Every time I turn on the radio, I hear some sort of drug message or anti-drug message. Or latest one is drugs lead to AIDS. You know, well, I mean, some drugs do lead to AIDS, but marijuana? I don't know about that one. They say that... when you smoke a joint, you become less inhibited, so you have sex and you get AIDS. It's a bit of a reach, at least for me it is. I think the message that we want to be sending out here, folks, is use your brain, you know? Use your brain, and if you're going to do something, just think of the consequences and take precautions. Unfortunately, everything I'm hearing, it seems to be going towards abstinence all the way. Abstinence from drugs, abstinence from sex, abstinence from anything. Well, this is not the show where we abstain from anything, and we're not going to start tonight. It's 21 minutes after 11 o'clock. We're going to begin by taking some phone calls. First, let's see how our dub session is doing. Oh, still going strong. And we are... going to be taking your phone calls at 632-6901. That's right, 632-6901. And the topic is open. The topic is open pretty much about anything that that's on your mind, but I think most people will want to talk about what's happening overseas because that's something that could affect most of us fairly soon, right? What do you think?
Yeah, sorry, I had you in the wrong channel.
Hello? Are you... Oops, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, sorry, I had you in the wrong channel. Go ahead, say whatever you said again.
This is Andrew Goldberger.
Andrew Goldberger, how are you doing? It's nice to hear a friendly voice on the other side.
Yeah. What is the topic? I didn't really listen.
Aren't you listening to the radio, Andrew?
No.
Aren't you? Andrew, this is what I'm going to do, okay? I'm going to do you a favor here. I'm going to put on this recording right here. Hold on.
Here it is.
There's a special phone number you can call to hear the USB signal. Now, here it is. There's a special phone number you can call to hear the USB signal.
Here it is. What? There's a special phone number you can call to hear the USB signal. Now, here it is.
Oops, I hung up on him. I didn't mean to do that. But let's see if we can get a better line there, because that that line kind of was terrible. Had a hum on it. You know, I don't like hums.
All
right, all right, all right. I get the point, I guess. 632-6901. Good evening. Is anybody there? Well, I guess there's nobody there. And we have nobody left. Oh, I don't, you know, I think our signal really isn't reaching out tonight, because we were having some serious problems with it before. If you're out there, anywhere, whether you're in Massachusetts or Connecticut or Wisconsin or even around here in Long Island, give us a call, 516-632-6901. Let us know you're out there. Something wrong with the atmosphere tonight. We know that much. All right. Well, until we start getting calls, we're going to have to go to our emergency feature. Our emergency feature is becoming a regular feature now, and we've gotten lots of mail on it, lots of response. It's generated a fair bit of controversy, but that's the way things go around here. Let's go into it. Again, our phone number, 632-6901. Hallowed halls of the State University of New York at Stony Brook, the question rises again and again, like so much spit from the back of your throat. What's for lunch?
Good morning. Today, Friday, November 30th, at all three cafeterias for lunch, Manhattan clam chowder, roast beef French dip, vegetable stromboli. Their hot deli menu is the chef's choice. At H cafeteria for dinner, soup du jour, roast loin of pork, stuffed shells with plain sauce, vegetable egg roll. Dinner at Kelly is soup du jour, turkey divan, tricolored pasta, beef and broccoli egg noodles. Dinner at Roth is soup du jour, beef stew with biscuits, Cajun fish, Creole vegetable stew. The Fanny Bryce Food Mall is open for lunch and dinner, serving Italian, Mexican, Chinese, and American favorites. We had a nice group of guys that came yesterday that said to say hello to the girls at 1340. Have a good day. Talk to you next week.
Well, not with that voice there. Well, it sounds like she's losing it. Boy, that was nice of the guys to say that, huh? Vegetable stromboli soup? What the hell is that? I gotta go down and check that out. Well, What's for Lunch is a regular feature of Brain Damage, and I have fantasies about meeting that woman. She must be some special kind of person to come up with such a, I guess, a loving variety of things for the sometimes sick minds here at Stony Brook. 632-6901 is our telephone number, and it's 27 minutes after 11 o'clock. Whew. It's always a bit dramatic when we find out what's going on in the cafeterias. Sobering moments, to say the least. 27 minutes after 11. I keep saying that. I don't know why. Good evening. Okay. I'll make sure I pass along that request. Good evening. Oh, there's another dial tone here. You know, I don't know where everybody is, but there doesn't seem to be anybody out there tonight. I know why. Our signal sucks. It's the worst. You can't get it anywhere outside the campus anymore. Something horrible is happening to the atmosphere. If you're anywhere outside the campus, please call us and let us know that we're even reaching you, because there's something seriously wrong out there, and we're aware of it, and we don't know what to do about it. Stations from Philadelphia, stations from Connecticut, they're all stepping on us, and there's absolutely nothing we can do about it right now. But we are trying, folks. We are trying to get things changed. We're going to need lots and lots of support and help and that kind of thing. What shall we do next? Well, we could make that phone call I've been threatening to make. Shall we try it? Okay, let's try it. I managed to finally get a correct phone number in Baghdad. And we're going to try to actually reach the radio people over there. Oh, come on. Give me a break. I didn't even try. Okay, I don't know what's going on here. Let's try that one more time. That sounded like the campus wasn't letting us off this time. You know, this place is jinxed. Okay, I think we might make it this time. No, we're not going to make it. It's incredible. We cannot make calls off campus now. We cannot make calls off campus. We cannot get our signal off campus. They're turning off the heat. What's going on here? This place is falling apart. Machines breaking down. People falling apart. All right. The only thing that can help us at this point, the only thing, is you, our listeners. We've asked you to step in and save us from ourselves before. Now we're asking you again. Our phone number is 632-6901. Tell us if you think the Gulf crisis is on its way to being resolved. Tell us if you think there will be a war in the next 6 weeks. Oh, no. I'm told that a whole dormitory has no hot water until tomorrow. The dormitory known as G-Quad here on campus has no hot water until tomorrow. That's 30 minutes from now. We've got no listeners. Okay.